friends of the man, Dapper Dave. Who are we talking to next on this show?
Our next guest is an incredible actor and, as it turns out, loves a natter. The second series of his mind-blowingly popular podcast, David Tennant Does a Podcast With, is out now with another roster of weekly superstar guests. Yep, you guessed it. It's David Tennant.
Good morning, David.
Oh, morning.
Yes, good morning.
Oh, excellent. All the better for hearing you.
Well, well done on the podcast thing. I mean, you weren't the first on the bus, but you were pretty much ahead of lots of other people. When did you and the worlds of podcasting collide?
Well, I've loved a podcast since the early days. I've loved listening to them. And then I started, you know, one of those conversations, I was talking to my agent about podcasts because she loves them too. And then suddenly she'd arranged a meeting, and suddenly I was talking about doing one. It kind of happened a little bit by accident, but I'm very glad that it did.
I'm sure you are. So what are we, 3 years in, 4 years in now? What
no,
is it?
This is only number two.
Is it?
This is my second run. Yeah, but they've not been quite annually. There was a bit of a gap.
I feel like there's been more. I mean, I enjoyed Tina Fey. You've had some great guests on, haven't you?
Yeah. People have been very enthusiastic. It's been great.
And they seem to know.
There's been a few people who didn't want to know, but we're not going to discuss them.
Yeah, forget. They will one day, David.
Sure.
They all come in. Book it and they will come. But Tina Fey, for example, she seemed to know who you were. Are you big over in the States? Are people aware of your renown over there?
Oh, I wouldn't say big. I'm sort of occasionally. I think Tina Fey's daughter is a bit of a Doctor Who fan.
Oh, there you go.
I think that helps, if I'm honest with you. Yeah. I'm a bit more. I don't know. I was going to say a bit more viral in the United States, but currently I don't think that's a very good way of putting it.
Well, either a good virus, it's a bad virus. We'll take you as a good one.
Sure.
But it's funny you should say that about Doctor Who and about Doctor Who getting you being the key to unlocking certain doors. Because I know people who've done things on different shows, and it's often the kids that get the mum and dads to say yes to certain things they otherwise might not.
Sure.
So Doctor Who, I would imagine, very handy as far as those particular locks are concerned.
It is very handy. And of course, it's a bit more, it's quite cross-generational as well. So you'll discover people in the oddest places who are Doctor Who fans. And this week on the podcast, we've got Stacey Abrams, who is this very, you know, huge mover in the American Democratic Party, which currently, of course, is a fascinating place to be with all that's going on in the United States at the moment. And by chance, I found out that Stacey Abrams was a Doctor Who fan. So that was my way in with her. So yes, it can be a very useful little, yeah, it can grease some locks.
Well, let's just have a little listen. This is like we've done some work here. Let's have a little listen to David in conversation with Stacey.
What happens to America if Biden doesn't win in November? I mean, how scared should we be of what Trump will do next?
I have a vast and vivid imagination. I cannot predict, but I will tell you what I know. I know this is a man who has done his best to weaponize almost every facet of our democracy to serve his personal ends and the ends of his cronies. But what terrifies me is that if we do not thwart their advance, we have not seen a sufficient number of people willing to actually do good to believe we can survive with the 50-year history of, you know, American leadership that we have seen, and that we will succumb, unfortunately, to the same fates that have befallen other strong democracies that have just crumbled in the last 20 years.
And David, that's a proper chat you're having there.
Well, these are proper times, aren't they?
There's
some serious stuff going down. So, yeah, someone like Stacey is massively very wise and gives a bit of perspective.
See, I think the most frightening thing about Trump going forward isn't the sort of the subsequent 4 years should he win again in November. It's the 2.5 months before that, him thinking himself he might not win and he wants to go down in flames.
There are many terrifying prospects when you start talking about him, aren't there?
Yeah.
For me, it's just the fact that over 4 years he's undermined the idea of what truth is.
Yeah.
That it's no longer a sort of black and white issue that he can sort of wriggle in between. And I worry that there are some politicians closer to home that feel there's a playbook to learn from, which worries me.
Yeah, you have to destroy the playbook and say, no, short term, yeah, but there's no future here. When the journalist last week in the White House briefing asked him about the lies that he'd told and how he felt about that, and then I don't know if you heard, but one of the news channels did an approximate but maybe underestimation of the number of proven lies that he's told the world in the last 4 years, and the number was 20,000.
I mean, the leader of the free world. It's terrifying, isn't it? How have we got here? How have we managed to let this happen?
I don't know. What did you talk to Olivia Colman about, Whoopi Goldberg about, John Hamm about? Where do these conversations come and where do they go?
They sort of, they ramble a bit. There's a sort of usual, there's usually a bit of a structure and a bit of biography, I suppose, finding out where these people have come from, you know, what their family might have been like, what their general views on life are. And then it just sort of goes where it might go. We record for quite a long time and we edit it down. And I think because I'm not a journalist and because people feel relatively safe.
Yeah.
You know, it's all very... I'm not out to trip anyone up or to trap anyone or to get people to reveal things they don't want to reveal. And any of the guests can come back and go, you know that bit we talk about? Let's take that bit we did, let's take that out. It's a safe space, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah.
So the upside of that is hopefully you get a sort of conversation you might not get somewhere else. It's a bit more freeform, it's a bit more relaxed, it's a bit more intimate, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fairly new to the world of podcasting, listening to it. I'm 2 years in, which it's fledgling, right. but still, it's like, this reminds me, the take-up of this reminds me of the take-up of electronic screens, because I remember Sky talking about the fact that, you know, I think it was like, you know, this is just approximate figures, but 5 to 6 years ago, maybe 5 to 10 years ago, 3% of people who watched Sky Sports watched on a tablet. And then the next year it was 12%, the next year it was 30%, and now more people watch Sky Sports on a tablet or mobile device than they do on a telly.
Interesting.
And I think the exponential take-up of podcasting is not dissimilar. Which were the ones that got you hooked?
Well, I do like the political podcasts, as I may have given myself away in this conversation. Yeah. But I also like the ones that, you know, I was quite inspired by. Alec Baldwin does a podcast called Here's the Thing.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
Just writing that down there. Okay.
That was sort of the one that made me think, well, maybe there's a British version of that.
Right.
And he does a similar sort of thing. I mean, basically, I copied him because he's cool. And I thought, ooh, I'd like to be Alec Baldwin. It's purely aspirational from my point of view. And he does that. Yeah, his goes back years now. He's got people like Elaine Stritch on there. And it's just him kind of hanging out and finding out about people that he admires. And that's really where my idea came from.
Yeah, I mean, you can hear it. You can hear it in my voice as well on this show, as well as, you know, on podcasts. You can hear people who have a job that has enabled them to meet people they've always wanted to talk to. I mean, that's not a bad reason for doing it anyway. And you might earn the odd shilling in between.
Well, what a treat, yeah. I mean, a lot of mine as well I've called in favours. You know, so there's a lot of it's hanging out with mates, which is always fun. And you know, you, that gives you a bit of a way in here and there. But this season, I suppose, probably slightly more, has been people who I didn't previously know, like Stacey Abrams, like Jim Parsons, who was in last week's one. Who you just kind of think, I bet that person's someone I'll like and get on with. And so far, I've been proved right. I've yet to have the awkward interview, the kind of David Blaine and Eamon Holmes moment. I've yet to have that.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, David Blaine wouldn't go on Eamon Holmes' podcast, I wouldn't imagine. You know, it's different because it's sort of, there's so much sort of dealt before the microphones or the recording is switched on. So let me ask you this. So when you said to your agent said, well, you suggested that you might be interested in doing this. And then your agent said, well, it's, you know, you need to go and see this person, that person. Well, so how does it work? How does making a podcast from your point of view work? What is the process?
I met a couple of producers at a company called Something Else who do that sort of thing. So that made it very easy for me. So they just went, well, here's a studio and this is how we'll do it. And they kind of do all the stuff that I don't know how to do.
Right.
Although, of course, this run has been slightly different because I haven't been in studios. I've been in my own house, which in some ways allows people from all over the world to get involved. You don't have to coordinate your movements, but it's been a bit of a steep learning curve with where to plug which wire and where and how to make sure you're pressing record at the right moment.
Cue nervous laughter from the host of the show here.
So that's been interesting.
So are you talking?
I'm sure you've heard.
Are you talking from your home studio now?
I mean, home studio.
Yeah, but yes. Because it sounds great. It sounds fantastic.
No, I got like a posh mic and I've got a little box that it all goes through. So, Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be recording an album here, but I can just about do some talking. Yeah.
But have you surrounded yourself with soft furnishings? Would you like to take us through the chaise longue to your left and your grandfather's armchair to your right? Or?
I'm in a slightly stripped down version this morning because it's early and the house is quiet.
Right.
But I do have, there are various mattresses, children's mattresses, of which we seem to have an abundance in our house that I can place behind me and beside me, and I can there's a sort of what's it called, like a vanity screen, is that the name of it, like made of wicker that I toss various padded blankets over as well.
Well, it's blimmin' working. You sound fantastic.
Well, I'm delighted.
You sound fantastic.
I'm delighted, yeah. It doesn't look good, though. It's good that it's audio only.
It's the radio, mate. I don't look good either. That's why I'm here. And so, now, talking of your home and talking of, the quiet periods, we've got to give you a live round of applause for Staged. It was one of the best things on during lockdown.
It was one
of the best things on telly ever. It was so gentle. It was... David, we didn't want it to end. The 15-minute episode idea was absolute genius. There was gentle twists. How do you have a gentle twist?
Cloth. Yeah,
very good. Yeah. So for people who don't know, it still exists. It exists now and it always will, thank heaven. What is it and how can they watch it?
It's still on the iPlayer. I'm saying that quite confidently. No, I'm sure it's still on the iPlayer. It's 6 15-minute episodes. It's myself and Michael Sheen playing two actors called David Tennant and Michael Sheen, who look quite like us, a sort of version of ourselves. And the idea is that we, as we all were locked in our house and had to find a way to continue. We were going to do a play. So the director decides, well, let's try and rehearse this play over digital devices and see what happens. And it all kind of dissolves from there. So it's the story of Michael and I in our house with our respective partners trying to stay sane through lockdown, really.
So actual houses, actual partners, actual postponed theatre job?
Yeah. I had a theatre job that has been postponed, and Michael had other things that have been postponed. We weren't in one together but it's a short leap to get to there.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because it's like the old J.R. Hartley Yellow Pages ad, because he phones up for the book. Do you have Fly Fishing by J.R. Hartley? They said, yes, we have one copy. What's the name? Can you reserve it for J.R. Hartley? And then people started to try and find this book because it didn't exist because the copywriter has just invented it for the ad. And then they had to write the book and the book went to number one. So the thing that you were both rehearsing for over Zoom, could that now, you know, when we all, you know, become less locked, you might have to write this show and we might have to go and see it.
There might be a more interesting play we could do, to be honest. Six characters in search of an author. I think Michael and I, if we were going to do a play, might find something else. I don't know. Maybe we should. I'd love to do a play with Michael. That would certainly be a tonic.
I love him. I love you, but I might love Michael a bit more. And I don't mean that sort of disingenuously.
I'll let you have that. He is very lovable, especially now he's got that big cuddly beard.
Yeah, and the big cuddly belly. He's just turned into this like this a likable silverback, if that's all right with everybody. And by the way, the fact I compared you, you're incomparable. You're both stunning. Let's just talk about the fact that you knew what you wanted to do when you were three. When you were three, you knew you wanted to be an actor. What a blessing that is.
Disgusting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know. I don't understand. And I can only trace it because it comes from Doctor Who, as all roads in my life seem to end up there. I watched John Pertwee turn into Tom Baker, and I can trace that back and find that I was 3 years old. But I have a very distinct memory of it, and that leading to a conversation with my parents about what actors were.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, this was a very sort of young notion of what an actor was that did manage to mature alongside me, as much as I've ever matured. So it was an idea that proved tenacious as I grew up, I suppose, and began to understand what that would really mean. But the kernel of it was at a very weirdly young age, yeah.
So can you actually know something then, or can you only post know it after it's happened? Otherwise, it would have to have remained a thought, because you know it now because it's turned out to be the case.
Yes. I know that I had that conversation with my parents about actors being the people who were pretending. That, you know, that first conversation about the stories you watch on the TV not actually happening inside the TV, that kind of a conversation.
Yeah.
And then the idea of the beginning of an understanding of what an actor was, that's what that conversation was. And I remember, and I think from that moment on, that was something I wanted to do. I wanted to be involved in telling those stories. Yeah, I mean, the specifics of how that idea matured beyond that, it's impossible to unpick, I suppose, from this distance. But it always felt like a straight line from there.
How did you go about being good enough to become an actor? How did you go about being any good? Because you know, you see some actors and they're at one level, you see other actors and they're at another, and you and Michael, I mean, you know, it doesn't... I love being in the company of people who are really good at what they do, and you are really good at what you do.
Well, you can talk, Mr. Radio. I don't know. I mean, I could ask you the same thing. I don't know. I suppose if you really want something and you work at it, and yeah. It's all about...
But let me put it another way. Let me not... Because I get what you're saying. It's very difficult to answer that question about yourself. When you see other people, okay, because I think if you work at anything hard enough and you've got a kernel of sincerity about it, then you'll probably get there in the end one way or another. You may not end up doing what you once set out to do, but you do something around that, you know, around that particular sort of nucleus, around that sort of the eye of that particular storm. But when you look at other people, say when you were 11, they were 11, or when you were 18, 19, did you see some people who were naturally amazing at acting, or does everybody... That's my question. Does everybody have to work at it?
I think maybe the thing you have to work at is feeling like you're allowed to be there, because I think so much of acting is about a sense of relaxation and confidence and being and sort of existing in that moment. That's what convinces an audience when they can't see the joins, when it feels like someone inhabits the space that they're in. And a lot of it for me, and this is probably different for different people, was about thinking I'm allowed to be an actor. I had no precedence around me. I didn't know people who were actors. I'd never met, you know, I was in Paisley. I didn't, it was slightly odd that I imagined I could be an actor because people weren't around me.
Yeah.
So I think the journey for me was a lot about first of all getting to drama school and thinking, wow, they've let me in the door.
Yep.
And then being in that room in those classes and going, oh, I can, do you know what, I can compete, I can sort of hold my own here. And that's a journey that one still is going on, just that sense of thinking, this is okay, I'm allowed to be here. And from that sort of sense of confidence comes sort of everything else, because that allows you then to... Once you feel like you're allowed to be there, then you can start to play.
Well, then you can ease off, and when you ease off, a space appears, and that's when the magic happens, I suppose. The further you are away from the field you want to be in, I think is advantageous, and I've never actually realised that before until you just said what you said, because the further, the more remote the chances are of you getting anywhere near it, the less it takes of experiencing some of it to feel like you're in it wholly. And so you're probably much more enthusiastic than people who felt it was more of a right.
I think that's true. I think I probably worked harder than others. But then that in acting, that's not always good. Sometimes, because it is. It's also about an ease, isn't it? It's also about a sense of confidence and a sense of... And I certainly look back at some of my earlier performances and think, oh, just trying too hard.
Come on, that's all right, isn't it? That's the way it is.
Of course, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah,
it's not. It's all, you know, it's the imposter syndrome, isn't it? It's thinking I'm not allowed to be here, and I'm going to be somebody's going to tap me on the shoulder any minute.
How's that going?
Still there. Still waiting for the doorbell to ring for the acting police to show up. And remove me.
I think you're going to be fine.
Surrender your equity card immediately, forthwith.
What I love, here's a description of you. David Tennant is best known for his roles as the 10th incarnation of Doctor Who, Giacomo Casanova, the title prince in the RSC's 2009 adaptation of Hamlet, Barty Crouch Jr. in the fantasy film Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, D.I. Alec Hardy in the ITV crime drama series Broadchurch, and Kilgrave in the Netflix superhero series Jessica Jones. Best known for loads of things. It's great. I thought it was going to be one thing there, or maybe two, but you're best known for loads of things. That's cool.
That's nice. Yeah, of course. Because, obviously something like Doctor Who, you can slightly blow everything else away a little bit. It can be hard to get past. But yeah, that's what you want. You want to keep people guessing, don't you? You want something to open doors rather than close them, I guess, professionally.
So you had the call from Harry Potter Central, and there are other forces like that, and the phone call could could come in from. So you had the Harry Potter core. Have you had a James Bond core? Not necessarily play Bond, but have you had the Eon Productions core?
No, I've not.
So you've got to get that
slightly
one.
Slightly annoyed about that. I'd quite like one of those. That's good. Yeah.
Have you had a Star Wars core?
I've been in a Star Wars cartoon. Does that count?
No.
Are we counting that? I had a letter from George Lucas. I've got a letter from George Lucas.
What did it say?
Well, because I did a voice in a cartoon that I won a prize for, and he wrote me a thing saying, "Welcome to the Star Wars." I've got it. It's just here. It's literally just here.
When did you win this competition?
Competition? It's the Emmys, for goodness sake, Chris. Competition?
No, I thought hang on a minute. You're young enough to have been a kid to enter a George Lucas competition to voice a character when you were still 13 before you got in anywhere. I didn't know he was flipping Grammys, did I?
You're describing my acting career as that of a competition winner.
You said I won a prize. I thought it was like with Blue Peter or the Beano or something. Smash hits. Or looking.
I took the Emmys for George Lucas to write me a letter. But he did.
Well,
I'm
didn't know that.
Proud of it.
I can only apologise. So you'd welcome another Star Wars call, I'm presuming.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was just a voice. That's all right, isn't it? It wasn't my own voice. I was like putting on a funny voice, so I could definitely do another Star Wars appearance. Well, I'm ready for that.
Ewan McGregor, I think he got the Star Wars gig after talking about it on TFI Friday. Okay.
You're the gatekeeper.
Yeah, then Samuel L. Jackson came on TFI Friday and he said, is it true, Samuel, is it true that Ewan got a gig on Star Wars after coming on this show? And I said, yeah. He said, well, hell, I'd like a gig on Star Wars. Guess what happened next, right?
Well.
Now, this isn't TFI Friday, but it's still me.
Let me say the magic words. I would like a gig on Star Wars. Thank you, Chris.
Okay. I mean, it's not my gift. It's not within my gift. But
Well, you're making it sound like it is.
I know.
You're promising a lot here.
And it's been a good show. We're on a roll. It's home time in 13 minutes. So there's the Star Wars call. There's the Eon Productions call. What are the big calls? What about the Marvel or the DC call?
Well, I've been in the Marvel world with Jessica Jones. Oh, yeah. Sure. So I guess either he comes back in some other form, or DC Comics, that'd be good, wouldn't it? We've got a whole other world.
What other calls might you look forward to?
It's hard to know until they come, isn't it? Yeah. People always say, "What parts do you still have?" I don't know, unless someone's written a script.
Yeah, but about franchises? Big mortgage settling franchises.
What's left? What have I not ticked off? I've done Marvel. I've done Doctor Who. I've done Harry Potter. Yes, Star Wars and DC. Okay. And James Bond, What else is there?
What about Ozark season 4?
I haven't watched any of
Ozark. Oh, you get at it!
Is
you
it
get
really?
To call yourself an actor!
Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my goodness me. I only saw the first two episodes myself last night. After 4 years. You got to get... David, you have to get on it.
You're seeing this after two episodes?
It's Breaking Bad good.
Right.
If that's a phrase.
Right. Yeah.
It's Breaking Bad good, is what it is.
Yeah.
So who's the most famous person you talked to in real life last?
Oh, I mean, other than my wife.
Yeah, well, she's famous. She's very famous.
She is very famous.
She's very good.
The last famous person I spoke to was probably someone that we just recorded for the podcast, but I'm not allowed to say who it is yet.
Oh, come on. Why not? All publicity is good publicity. Bad publicity and naughty publicity is best. This is naughty publicity, David. This is the kind you need. Come on.
Can we play...
Let's play 20 questions. Let's play 20 questions.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to end up giving this away, aren't I?
Male?
Male.
Yeah. Okay. In the business?
Yes, but not quite the same business.
All right. Okay.
An adjacent profession.
An adjacent profession. Okay. So not acting. So not acting.
That's it. Well done. Yes.
Okay. So TV presentation.
No. No, very much. Very much the wrong alley you're barking down there.
Okay. So theatre.
No.
Okay. Oh, goodness me.
No. Not without. Not with. Well, I mean, I think he might have stuck a toe in theatre.
Music.
No.
Oh, so art.
Nope.
I know all things are art in the end.
Not in terms of visual art.
Okay,
no.
Writing. Author.
Yeah.
Very famous author. Extremely world-renowned author. British.
Yeah.
Okay. Crime. Thriller.
Sometimes. Sometimes.
Okay.
All the genres.
Go on, Vassos. Come on, pile in.
John le Carré.
Don't say John. If it's John le Carré, we're gonna have to hang up. But I don't even know how to hang up on a Zoom call. Is it John le Carré?
Is John le Carré still with us?
Yeah, of course he's still with us. You see him walking his Labrador on Hampstead Heath every day if you go there. Well, that's why then, I go.
Then maybe it's John le Carré then.
So it's not John le Carré. Okay. What does it begin with? What does his first name begin with?
Is it W? Is he just going to go through the alphabet? You're better than this.
Is it
Chris?
W? Is it William?
I'm not giving you any more.
It's William. Is it William Goldman?
William. It's William Shakespeare. It's William from Beyond the Grave. I did a podcast with Doris Stokes, and we connected with William Shakespeare.
Why can't you tell us? Why is it such a big deal?
I don't know. Because we try and, you know, hold some things back.
All right. Who can you tell us about this coming up?
Next week we're with George Takei from Mr. Sulu, who has the most incredible life
and voice, unbelievable voice.
Absolutely. Incredible.
The most beautiful diction in the history of diction.
Yes. Absolutely. And a wonderful, I mean, the whole Star Trek thing is fascinating because there's, years and years and years they did that. But also his childhood.
I know where we're going with this.
Unbelievable.
You want the Star Trek call, don't you? That's what you want.
That's another one. That's the one I want.
That's the one.
That's the one I want. Where's the Star Trek call?
Okay. David, it's great to talk to you. I want you, it's not Jeffrey Archer. It's not going to be Jeffrey Archer.
Ian Rankin.
Jeffrey Archer.
See, Ian Rankin.
Sully my microphone.
Ian Rankin.
Jeffrey Archer.
Ian Rankin.
Tune in soon to find out who is in back up.
It's Ian Rankin. Right. What jobs have you missed out? What jobs should you be doing now and getting paid for that you're not allowed to because you can't?
Around the World in 80 Days. I was halfway through. I've still got the haircut. I was doing that when...
Is it the haircut with the extensions?
Yeah, but the extensions have now all fallen out and my hair has replaced what the extensions were doing. So if we do get back to filming, I won't need to have the extensions back. So there's an advantage of lockdown.
All right, text just in. Lisa McWilliam on Twitter. I don't understand why we're not talking about David starring role in Postman Pat, the movie alongside your good self, a family favourite in our house.
Sure, what a triumph that was, eh?
Do you remember my bit?
I don't think I ever saw it.
See a movie you were in?
Might not have seen.
Well, allow me to remind you. Here we go.
Right, how about some music?
Good morning, Greendale. Here's the Saturday's latest hit single. Please, Mr. Postman. I wish I was a postman.
Oh, I love this song, Jess.
Yeah, go and tell us about your bit. I've showed you mine. Show me yours.
Stephen Mangan there as the glorious glorious performance as Pat.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And what about you? What about your bit?
I was the baddie.
The baddie? By the way, the baddie.
Yeah. I did my best Cuthbertson, I seem to remember.
It was a great film. It's available. I think it's on Netflix. It's episodic now. It's like 20 episodes.
Don't worry about Ozark. Let's get into that.
Yeah, okay. A couple of recommendations for you, David, before we go. Anything hot on your box?
We've been watching The Boys, which is on Amazon Prime.
The Boys, which is
a really good show. Yeah.
Okay. And when was...
very good.
We've been banging on also today about Avatar. Did you watch Avatar originally? Have you heard about the latest budget? If you didn't watch it originally, will you watch it now or would you watch it again with the kids?
I did see it originally. There's like two sequels coming, right? Massive.
Yeah, budget.
Production. Budget, I don't know. What happened was the budget?
$1 billion.
Oh, stop it.
No, honestly.
Stop it.
Honestly, it's $1 billion budget for the next Avatar.
Wow.
Come on.
Imagine this rubbish.
Don't say that because there's still a chance. There's the Avatar call. That's the one, David.
Well, it wouldn't be rubbish if I was in it. I could help save them $1 billion.
All right, listen, we've got to go. How do people get to your podcasts? All of them.
on all your podcast platforms. Apple, Spotify, I don't know. I'm sure people know how to get a podcast, don't they?
All right, David Tennant.
If they don't, they can Google it.
Okay, David Tennant does a podcast with Ian Rankin soon and lots of people before that. Thank you, bye-bye.
Bye.
Ta-da. The Chris Evans Breakfast.